time we talked about love, and I elucidated on all the great mysteries, so I'm sure that's all clear for everybody now. We talked about resistance, and the analogy here, if you weren't here, is to imagine that the Tweety is across the quad, and the quad is empty, it's easy to run across, it's during graduation, and there are a billion people there, it's really hard to run across. And so, different materials pose different degrees of difficulty for the electrons to flow within them. And the electrons might run into other parts of the material and impart vibrations, basically that's thermal energy, and you can get heat or light coming off in principle. So it actually takes energy to shove a current through something that has resistance. And if you put it higher potential difference across the two, then there is a higher electric field within the material. If there's a higher electric field within the material, there'll be a larger force on the electrons, so you can shove them through. And so what that means is that the current that you get through a material is proportional to the potential difference that you put across the material. And this constant of proportionality we call the resistance. So if you plot the current versus the potential across the material, you'll tend to get a linear relationship. And if you have a low resistance, if it's a low resistance, this number is low. What that means is as you go to larger potential difference across it, you get a smaller change. As you go, you get a much larger change in the current. So it's a relatively low resistance. It's easy to get the current flow. If you have something that has a high resistance, so if this number is high, then as I go to very large potential difference across it, I'll have a smaller current. Okay. So this is just slope. I just put this here to remind you that sometimes we use this epsilon, sometimes we use B. Sometimes we use little I's, sometimes big I's, sometimes big R's, sometimes little R's. So you have to judge this by context. When you're doing a very particular problem that has actual circuit elements in it, those you have to, you know, mark, and then consistently that symbol means that thing for that particular item, whatever it is. And it is important to maintain consistency at that point. Whether you like using little I's or big I's in the end doesn't matter, but if you put a current in a branch of a circuit and you label it little I1, it needs to be little I1 forever until you're done with that problem. Okay? And there's no, you know, strict convention with that. Within any given textbook, there may be. All right, but what's really important is consistency within the context of a given problem. So if we shove current through a resistor, we're literally shoving our way across the quad, so we leave a lot of energy behind. It takes energy to do this. And so what is current? Current is the amount of charge passing a given point in the circuit per unit time. And it could be varying with time. So you have to think of it as a derivative. This is the instantaneous current. Yes, you could have an average current. You could time average it over an hour. That may be what's relevant. That probably is what's relevant, is you're actually asking, are you able to melt the water? If you're worried about how much heat you're producing in something, it's not usually the instantaneous thing that's so important. It's sort of the time average over some period of time. But generally, just like it's important to use velocity is the instantaneous rate of change of position versus time, current is the instantaneous rate of change of the charge per unit time across some element of the circuit. This is the relationship we just saw on the last page where I put an epsilon instead of a V. V equals IR is Ohm's law. And then this energy that you lose in the resistor from knocking things around, the energy per unit time, which is the power, is given as I times V or I squared times R or V squared over R, all of which can be rewritten in terms of the others by using that relationship. So you can use whichever ones. Okay, any questions on that stuff? And then just like we did with capacitors, you can have resistances in series or in parallel, and I can take any configuration of resistors and I can rewrite it in terms of a series of parallel or resistance problems. So no matter how complex it is, I can break it down into a bunch of problems that are either in series or in parallel. So this is really all you need to determine the equivalent resistance of some combination of resistors. And so for resistors in series, a way to think about it is you have to fight your way through each of these resistors if you're a charge trying to get through. So the total resistance you see is going to be the sum of the individual resistances. And for resistors in parallel, we derived last time that it's the inverse relationship that's important. And the only real gotcha here is that if you look at capacitors, capacitors in parallel are added in series like this, and capacitors in series are added with this reciprocal relationship. And so that's flipped from the resistances. So neither are hard, but you do have to keep them straight. Okay. So let's imagine that we have some form of a circuit that has an EMF or a battery in it. And in this particular one, I'm going to assume that the battery is encased so it looks like this. So what this little r represents in this particular circuit that I'm setting up would be what you might call the internal resistance of the battery. Most of the time, you won't have to deal with that. Sometimes you'll see a problem where they talk about internal resistance and battery. Generally, if I were to give you something in a workshop or on an exam, I'd be pretty explicit about this. I draw it like this, and I might talk about the internal resistance and battery. Okay. But so it's not meant to be tricky. It's just sometimes you just sort of assume it's zero and don't worry about it because you want to really talk about other things, and sometimes you let it be important. In this case, I'm throwing it in just for fun. And so what I'd like to do is to consider how the potential changes as we move around a closed loop in the circuit. All right? So first of all, let me just ask a question. Let's suppose that you start where that little X is, and you're, say, a charge, it doesn't really matter. Let's say that we start where the X is, and we go around the circuit back to this point. What's the change in the potential? No change. You start at one point, you come back to the same point. There's no change at all. Okay, so that may seem a little like a no-brainer, but it's pretty important to realize. Okay, so what I'd like to do is to imagine that we have current flowing around this thing. And just reminder, if I had to choose a direction for the current for a circuit like this, I choose it going this way. Why? Why not? You have a 50-50 shot. This is the battery. This is the positive terminal. The direction of positive current flow is always in the direction for, that's what we define as positive current, is the direction that the positive charge is going to flow. Okay, so all things being equal, if I have a circuit that's this easy, I know what direction the positive current has to flow, and so I drew it that way. So that's the direction the current will flow, and let's just say that we'll call, just to have points on the circuit that we can refer to, I'll put a point B here and a point A there. And now imagine that we look at the potential on the circuit as a function of where we are along the circuit. And so what I want to do is to basically cut the circuit and lay it out down to make it the x-axis. So the x-axis represents where we are in the circuit. So let's start out with sort of position A. And then we go and we encounter the battery. And then we go and we encounter the little resistor. Then we hit position B in the circuit. So what I'm really doing is I'm sort of walking from here all the way around the circuit in a loop like that. So we hit position B, and then we have a lot of conductor, and then we hit the big resistor R, and then we come all the way back to A. All right? So let me, because it's simple to think about potential if we define a zero. So let me just define for this situation the potential at point A to be zero. All right. So that means that if when we start out at A, we're at zero potential. And as we move along a conductor that is connected only to A and nothing else, it's all at the same potential. Which means as I walk along the circuit from here up to there, I'm moving from here to there, which is this, I'm at zero potential because that's all just a wire. Okay? Now I hit the battery. And what happens with the battery is the whole function of the battery is to raise the potential to a fixed value. So as I go across the battery, the potential goes way up, and it goes up to the value which is the potential of that battery. That's how you define the potential of the battery. So that means when I get over to this point on the circuit, the other side of the battery, here or here, I now have a higher potential. And as I walk along that part, I'm walking along the conductor, and it stays at the same potential. Okay? Now I hit the resistor. So we've come as far as the resistor now. To get through the resistor, it takes energy. What is potential? Think of it as work per unit charge. So the battery does work per unit charge to put this charge up at a high potential energy. Okay? Now the charge has a lot of energy, and now it has to use some of that energy to fight its way through the resistor. And the amount of energy it's going to lose is going to be equal to the potential that is across that resistor, the potential drop, which is I times R. So as you go across the resistor, the potential drops. The amount that it drops is going to be the amount of current times the resistance that you go through. Because V equals IR, that is the potential drop across the resistor, that's what you mean by it. So now we're through the resistor,
And now we walk past point B, but this is all a conductor, so it stays at the same potential. We stay at the same potential till we get to big R. Big R is now another resistor. I'm pretending in this example that it's a bigger resistance. And so now I know I'll have a big drop in resistance. And in fact, because on the other side of this, I'm connected to a conductor that is connected to point A, I know I have to drop down to the same potential that you have at point A. So it has to drop all the way to zero, so that when you get back to point A, which I conveniently forgot to label, you are at the same potential. Okay? So that is a way to think about what's happening in a little circuit like this. Any questions? Let us imagine that we have a circuit that looks like this, where these resistances are actually just light bulbs. Okay? And in fact,
lo and behold, I have before us a complicated set of light bulbs.
And so what I'm going to do is configure the switches so that the circuit looks just like this. Alright, so let me figure out how to do that. So I have things plugged in, and so our battery, if you will, is connected to this point and that point. So this is these are conductors, so it comes in, and this one splits, and this one splits with this switch. So I can activate the power across the circuit by throwing this switch, which I'm not going to do yet. Alright? Now, what I would like to do is to create that geometry. So to do that, what I want to do is different ways to do it. Okay. So you can forget this bulb, forget this bulb, and forget this bulb. Now there's a switch here that's on, so this is all one wire. Yes, I power these, but this switch is off. And this switch being on takes the same power and puts it on both sides, takes the same voltage and puts it on both sides of this resistor, so nothing happens. It just sits there. Okay. So this is on, so now what I do is I'm putting this one's off, so this is effectively doesn't exist now. So I have power coming here across that bulb, and this is connected up, so I power across these two bulbs. This switch is on, that switch is on. So I believe that what I have is exactly that geometry, where now the resistances that we're using are the resistances of the bulb. And yes, as the current goes through, it will create heat, but it also creates a lot of light. And the more power that is being spent shoving the current through the bulb, the brighter the bulb is, because there's more energy. Okay? So then, my question for you is, if I now flip that switch, I would like you to tell me what is the order of the brightness of the bulbs if I call this one A, this one B, and this one C. Perfect example. Perfect impact on them.
Right, exactly. So there's two resistances. This is two. are the same voltages.
Okay, so to do this, you need to think your way through a few things, all right? What kinds of things are important that you might consider? I saw at least four of you actually thinking about the problem. What do you think?
Maybe as the energy is going through the light bulb, because it's a resistor, it has to use up that energy, so there will be less for the next light bulb.
Very nice. So the statement is, as the current is going through one of the light bulbs, perhaps there's less energy to be used in one of the other light bulbs. What do you think of that?
That statement makes me feel like B is going to be less bright than A.
Okay.
Just deducting options.
What do you think?
I think if you look at it like with just the equations, you should get, so in series, the two top ones should just add, so there should be a total of 2R on the top part of the parallel circuit,
okay.
And then you should just have 1R on the bottom, so right. There's more resistance on the top than on the bottom.
Okay, so let's just stop there for a second. So the statement is, here you're going to have these two in series, so you have 2R. Here you have 1R, so the resistance is different here from what it is here. What do you think that might do? Say what? It'll channel the current in different ways. Okay, so if I think about water flow, which doesn't always work, and we'll see an example in a minute where it doesn't work. We think about water flow, what we've just said is you're facing more resistance on this path than this path, so there'll be less current through these two. What does that mean in terms of brightness? How does brightness depend on current?
More electrons.
If I say brightness, what do I mean physics-wise?
Excited.
Say what?
It's excited.
Yeah. But in terms of physics speak, it's energy. It's actually energy per unit time, so it's the power. Right? So how does power depend on current? We have a bunch of formulas for it. Right? Here. Okay. So we've now shown on these two branches, we have different resistances. That leads to different currents. And you now look at these, and it's how the power goes. It depends on the current or the resistance on however you look at it. But notice here, it goes the square of the current and linear in resistance. So on the top branch, we have 2R. If I have twice the resistance, then I'm going to have half the current because B equals IR. The top branch and the bottom branch both have the same potential across them. So if I have 2 times the resistance here, I'll have twice the current. I'm saying half the current. Half the current, twice the resistance. This piece basically will go as 1/2 what I would have if I had a single resistor and I just have it. So I would, based on that, think that you will have less power being expended up above across each of the poles than you do down below. Then we had the question, or the thought, that as the current goes through, you expend energy and leaves less here. So the idea would be this one will be brighter than that one. Or the other way around. It's going the other way. What do you think about that? In a sense, it's a very good thought. I think it's a good thing to think about. Oops, here we go. But how does that really work? Because as far as the system knows, I could put this in a box and it would look like one resistance. And I have that potential across that resistance. So that means there's a certain current that goes through there. The current that goes through this branch has to go through both poles. They both happen to have the same resistance. So it is certainly true that if I were to make this type of plot going across that branch with the two resistors, it would start at a higher potential and it would drop across one and then it would drop across the other. Okay? But the thing is, the current has to be the same because whatever comes in one side of that has to go out the other side. And the resistance drops are the same by construction. Since the power only depends on I and R, if you want to think of it that way, or another way to think about it, since the current is the same, the potential drop across each of the resistors is the same. So no matter how... which of these you use, you'll end up with the same power across each. So it's a subtlety. But if I throw all that together, I think we argued that you have more resistance up top, which means the current is smaller, and current and power goes I squared R, so you're going to have less power expended in the top part than the bottom part, which means this one will be brighter than these two. Okay? And then one way of thinking has one of these being brighter than the other. The other thought is that if the current is really the same across both of them, if their resistances are the same, these will be the same brightness. All right? Any further thoughts? You okay with that? Let's see what happens. There you go. So these are the same brightness, okay? Much brighter. All right, so I have that written down in notes, basically. So you can go through and actually, the top, we have two times the resistance. So the current through the top branch basically it goes the potential, which is the same across the top and the bottom, over 2R. So the power, which goes as I squared times R, looks something like this, or I can simplify it to that. For the bottom branch, V equals IR. I in the bottom goes as V over R, so the power goes as V squared over R. So this is going to be 4 times bigger than that. So that's basically 4 times brighter. Okay? Okay, so same thing. Just like this. Now what happens if I unscrew this bolt? What does the circuit look like if I unscrew that bolt? What do I mean?
Can I break the circuit?
I mean, I think you could sort of think of it two ways. You can think, oh, I meant I then create a conductor there, or I break the circuit right there. For bulb, light bulbs, you are literally taking the electric current and shoving it through the resistor and then down. So they're in series with the whole wire. So if I unscrew it, I break the circuit there. So the language really means that you're talking about that circuit. So let us suppose that I go over there and I unscrew the left-hand top bulb. What happens to the brightness of bulb C? How many of you think it will change? Perhaps it becomes brighter. How many think that it stays the same? How many don't care? Right. So I think there's sort of two ways to think about this. One is, I have a fixed amount of current coming through here. Imagine it being water flow. Okay? And I break this, but if I demand that the amount of current stay the same, then I'm going to shove more current through here, and it will be brighter. Alright? Reasonable thing to think. The other way to think about it is that it's not the current that stays the same. It's the potential difference that stays the same. Which, in fact, is the problem, because I have a battery across here. I could tell you I have something that forces the current to stay the same. That is, I would change this potential to keep the current the same, and then it would be what we were just saying. But that's not this problem. This problem says I have a battery here, and this battery isn't affected if I unscrew this. So all that's happening is I have the same potential across this resistor, whether I unscrew that or not. And if you believe in that, then this brightness is not going to change at all, because the brightness only depends on the potential and the current and the resistance. The resistance doesn't change. The current that goes through it won't change in spite of the fact that I cut this branch off, because the potential hasn't changed. Okay, so it's sort of subtle. If you were thinking of this as water flow, then you can think of this, the potential is basically holding the pressure at this point and at that point the same, regardless of whether I break this branch or not. That's sort of what's happening. And if you were to hold the water pressure to be the same, regardless of what I do to the top branch, it's going to keep the flow through the bottom branch the same. Okay, but this is one where if you really believe in the water flow analogy, it can throw you a little bit here. But let's see what happens if I have to make sure I have the actual geometry I want here. So it doesn't change at all. Okay? Ta-da. Right. Any questions, worries, comments? Okay. All right. We've been talking about direct current. What I mean when I talk about direct current, which you might abbreviate as DC, is that the EMF that's in the thing is fixed and unchanging. I might have a complicated circuit that has many different EMFs, but you think of them as all having an orientation and a voltage value across the poles of the battery never change. Okay? For reasons that we will see soon, sometimes it's a lot easier technically to create a source of power that actually has a voltage that oscillates in time like a sine curve. So if I have something where the voltage maybe does this business as a function of time, the frequency of that oscillation, okay, how fast it goes up and down, how many times it changes per second, can depend on where you are. In the U.S., it changes at a rate of 60 hertz, which, if you recall from waves and physics, when they're famous, 60 times per second. But you'll find that frequency will change depending on the country you're in. This is what we call alternating current. Alternating current, or AC, and quite literally, if you can imagine, if we stop time for a moment and you imagine what's happening in a simple circuit where we have the voltage up this way, it's sending the current around one way, now the voltage of the battery flips the other direction. So that means the current's going to go the other way. So literally, you would expect to see the current flipping at 60 hertz through whatever. Okay, so it's a very different sort of thing. I'm here to tell you that you just don't even begin to know how lucky you are that I'm such a swell guy. Because I'm not going to make you do AC circuits. Be very happy about that. But for me to actually do that, I need you all to make a solemn promise to me right now. All right, so raise your right hand. All right? Raise your right hand and say, under any and all circumstances that could ever occur, I will not take my knowledge of electricity and magnetism that I learned in this class and ever try to wire my house. Okay? Kill yourselves and your family. Because AC world is very different from the DC world. Okay? We will do some cool things with DC, so we'll continue to do DC. AC is a lot nastier to sort of deal with. A lot of things really are very similar, but because you have this time-varying stuff happening, it becomes more complicated to think about. It's very powerful in its own way, and you may find that you'll find a situation in life where you'll have to go off and learn about AC circuits. But by and large, most of the time, you really need to think about DC stuff. And if any of you are taking the MCATs or the dental version or the whatever, or the LSATs, I don't know, whatever it is, if you find that you need AC circuits for that, would you come back and tell me that one of the reasons I eliminated from this class is I don't think you actually need it for that kind of stuff? So you will need DC, that I'm sure. And I can tell you that 98% of the time, anything you guys have ever run into, DC thinking works fine. So, all right. So that said, everybody's okay with that? No major objections? If you do have a major objection and you're afraid to open your mouth for fear that you might encounter bodily harm as you leave the class, which could happen, I will not put it above. If that's the case, the chapter is not being removed from your textbook and you are welcome to read it. And if you would like to have a private conversation about it, we can talk about it. But otherwise, I will not do AC circuits. Okay. That said, we might encounter somewhat more complicated DC circuits. Okay? So we have looked at the simplest sort of DC circuit you could, where I have a battery, a wire, and a resistor. So life is seldom so simple. We could imagine having a circuit where we have multiple batteries sort of oriented in random directions, and we throw some resistors in to these various branches. And so then the question is, if I were to do such a thing, what is the potential at various points on this thing, and how does the current flow? Okay? And so this could be sort of hard. And it turns out that you can solve this problem, and you can solve it exactly if you're given enough information. And it takes only two basic concepts, and then from that you apply it to this complicated circuit and extract however many equations you have unknowns, and you use that algebra to solve it. So the things that you need to know are not so bad. And what they are is that if I were to start at any point on this circuit, no matter how complicated it is, and walk around some loop in the circuit back to the same point, the change in the potential is zero. Even though I go across resistors and across different batteries, I know if I stop and end, if I start and stop at the same point, the change in potential has to be zero. That's true if I go this way. It's true if I go this way. It's true if I go like that. It doesn't matter how you go. So the thing to observe, and we'll do examples, is that if I go this way, I include information about these two resistors and those two batteries, and I get that the sum of the potential drops across those elements is zero. If I now start at the same point, but I now walk this way, I have that the sum of the potentials across this, that, and this is zero. That's actually independent information. So that is a new equation, a new relationship. So I now have two different relationships, two different equations. Usually it's better to sort of think of it topologically, which I just didn't do. If you look at something like this, you can go, well, here's one loop, and here's one loop. And each of these three loops contains different sets of things, elements in the circuit. So there's different information there. I can't do this one, and that one. And the reason is, if I take this one, I have used information about these pieces. If I take this one, I have information about those pieces. If I take this one, I have information about those pieces. Each of them contains different new information, so they count as a new relationship, a new equation. If in addition to that, I walk all the way around here and use that as my mathematical relationship, it's not an independent equation because all of these elements have been included in the previous equation. A way to think about it is if I took all those other equations and added them together, I'd sort of get that. So it's not an independent equation. So I can't use that as a new piece of information. Okay, so that's sort of the tricky part. The easy part is this is just true. Okay, so the question is, can you look at a circuit and derive a number of equations that you need from that? The other thing which gives you independent equations here is that the sum of the currents is zero at every junction. And this is where thinking about water flow sort of helps. All that really says is that if I have a certain current flowing in this branch and it hits this branch point, some of it goes this way and some of it may go that way. And all I'm saying is that the current here is equal to the sum of those two. So current doesn't just stop at a branch point. All right? Again, sort of a no-brainer, I hope. Because every circuit is different, etc., I would have independent information here. This one would involve current here, here, and here. Then I get down to this point, and it would involve current here as well as the current here. So this one is independent from that one. That would be two equations. Sort of same here. But once I have taken into account those three junction points, I now have an equation that involves this current, an equation involves that current, an equation involves that current. I don't consider this one because it's no new information. Okay? So on this circuit, I could get three different current equations, but not four. I could get three topology equations coming from here, but not four. So I could actually give a problem with this circuit and have up to 6 different things unknown and say determine. For given the amount of algebra you would have to do, I believe that would entitle you to a defense for justifiable homicide. So I will not do that to you this complicated. Although I might ask you to set up relationships or, you know, etc. Okay, so what's the hard part here? By the way, these are called Kirchhoff's laws, after this guy. So the idea is this is true. You take whatever the circuit is, you apply these as many times as you can to get all the independent equations you can, and then once you have the n independent equations, you can solve for n independent unknowns, period. So the unknowns could be the values of the resistances, it could be the values of the EMFs, it could be the currents, it could be some weird mix of the three, okay? Because you have to know the currents, the resistances, and the EMFs in order to establish what the whole thing is. So that each of those is valuable information. So what's the hard part here? One is looking at the circuit and knowing what the independent things are. So sort of what I was just dragging you through. What are the independent loops? What are the independent current sums? So that's one thing. In order to get it all right, we have to have conventions as we try to keep these algebraic signs right. And to tell you what, sort of give you a sense of what I mean, imagine that I'm walking and we create a graph like we did a little while ago about potential drops as I walk around the circuit. Here you might imagine I have a potential drop. Look at this, I'm walking through this battery backwards. So this one is a potential drop, not a potential gain. And then I come down here and I have a potential gain. So if I think about going around this loop this way, going across this one this direction or that direction, those are different things. They come in with different algebraic signs in the sum. And so we have to come up with a convention that somehow allows us to keep all the potential drops and gains sorted out properly in order to do the voltage sums as we go across. So there's a lot of conventions that you have to have here. And I say guts here because you might get this circuit thrown at you with just the resistances labeled, maybe the EMFs, and I might say, well, tell me about the currents. And there might not even be a direction of a current on here. And I look at this, I have no idea what directions the currents are. So you have to have the guts to say, well, I'm just going to draw directions for my current. I'm going to have this one go that way, this one go that way, this one go that way, this one go that way. I'll call this I1, I2, I3, I4. They may be all wrong. I may have chosen 4 different wrong directions. You just have to jump into it and choose, okay? And then, if you are consistent in setting these things up with the conventions properly chosen that do depend on the directions of the currents, in the end, when you then solve for those currents, if when you solve them you get an algebraic or negative answer, it means you chose the wrong direction. It means it's really going that way, okay? So it takes a little bit of guts to sort of jump in and start making crap up and starting to solve. Okay, I recognize that. So, but I say these problems are, you know, it sort of takes some guts and then you have to do conventions. And really, once you have things labeled, once you have the currents there, if you follow the conventions and you're consistent about it, it just drops out with the algebra. It's not actually hard. It can be, the algebra can be a pain in the butt, don't get me wrong. But it's not hard, technically. Okay, now with all of that, I'm sure you're really looking forward to this. It's not too bad. All right, so let me do a slightly simpler circuit, and let's talk about it and get the conventions right. So let us take, say, a circuit that looks like this. Thank you. Okay, and let's just say that this is EMF 1, this is EMF 2, this is R1, R2, R3, EMF 3. Okay, so that's your circuit. And I ask you now, solve for the currents. I need to know the magnitude and the direction of the currents in all parts of this circuit. I don't even tell you how many currents there are. Okay. So how do you do it? How many currents would there be? Sort of ask yourself, how many pipes are there if water were flowing around? Whatever water comes in here has to come out there. So there's one current here. The same is true here. And then you have this. Okay? So there are three different currents in this circuit. I don't tell you what direction they are, so you just go, I'm going to basically write down a current for each of these branches. So we'll just call this one I1. I'll call this one I2. I don't know what direction any of them go, but I'll just call I3 this way. There may be no truth to those directions at all, but they are three independent currents. That I can be sure of. So how do we do this? So I want to do two things. I want to make up. I want to do the current equations for each junction, of which there are two to consider. And I want to do the voltage sum around loops, all right? And if I look at this one, I would consider it to have basically two topological loops, okay? Two holes, if you want to think of it that way. Here's one hole, and here's the other hole. So I figure I can do one loop here and one loop here. Which direction do I go? It doesn't matter. But once you choose, you're stuck. So I'm going to choose to do a loop here and a loop here. Why do I go clockwise? I'm a clockwise sort of guy. If you want to do counterclockwise, go for it. Okay? But you will note that I do not choose a loop that goes all the way around here. If I'm using these two. And the reason I don't is because these two, if I think of them in total, contains all of these various elements of the circuit already. So it wouldn't be an independent loop. You could do one of these small loops and then do the big loop. And that would also work. So long as you then didn't do the other small one. So whatever you do, you choose the number of loops that will contain different information. All right. So then you might say, all right, dude, we got the loops. Now what do we do with them? All right. So what you do with the loops is you want to do a voltage. You want to sum the potential as you go around it. You want to sum the changes in potential as you walk around each loop. You have to choose the direction and labels of the currents before you walk around the loops for reasons that you'll begin to see as we do it. So we need convention. We need to know, if I walk across a battery a certain direction, does it increase the potential or decrease the potential? As I walk across a resistor in a certain direction relative to the current, do I increase the potential or decrease the potential? So conventions are as follows. delta V is negative if, as you walk across the resistor in the loop, you walk in the same direction as the current. If you walk in the opposite direction as the current, let's say that you're walking in the same direction, but in this case, we'll have the current flowing the other way. Then the change in potential is positive. So another way to say it is you have a potential drop going across a resistor in the same direction as the current. You have a potential rise going across a resistor going the opposite direction as the current. Okay? There's no physics magic to which is positive or negative. It's just you have to have it be one way for one thing and one way for the other thing in order to have sums and additions and subtractions of the voltage. I could have flipped these signs and you'd still be able to do the thing. But this is the convention. Okay, the other convention that you have to worry about is that the delta V is positive if you go across the EMF as if you walk across the EMF in the direction of the EMF, going from negative to positive. And we say if you're walking this way, but the EMF is now going from positive to negative, that is, you're going against the EMF, then the voltage sum is negative. Okay? All right, so those are the conventions, and they become second nature after you sort of get used to them, do a few problems. So let us imagine now, here's what we've chosen for our basic loops and our currents. So now let's go through and set up the equations. I'm going to start with the current equations. Some of the currents at a junction equal to zero. I have a junction here and a junction here. This junction, I want to sum the currents at that junction and set it equal to zero. I consider a current that is flowing into the junction as positive and a current that's flowing out as negative. You could do that opposite as well, it doesn't matter. But for me, I will call this, at this junction, plus I2 minus I1 minus I3 is equal to zero. Note, there's another way to think about this. This is equivalent to I2 is equal to I1 plus I3, which might mentally make more sense to you. At this junction, I2 is flowing in, I1 and I3 are flowing out. So I2 has to go into I2 and I, I'm sorry, I1. I2 has to go into I1 plus I3. Think of it either way, mathematically they're equivalent. So if I go to junction B, note that I have I1 coming in, I3 coming in, so I'd have I1 plus I3 minus I2. I can write that down. It's the same three currents. It is not independent information. It's already covered in the first equation. So there is no second junction equation. Okay. Then we go and we want the two equations that we get for the loops. So I'll call this loop 1 and this loop 2. So let's do the sum of the voltages equal to 0 for loop 1. I start somewhere on loop 1. Doesn't matter where. Here I am. Let's start here for fun. I now walk across R1. I am walking in the direction of the current, so the potential drop there is negative because I'm walking with the potential, with the current. So what that means is as I walk in loop 1, I would have a minus I1 times R1. I times R is the potential drop across the resistor. It's negative because I'm walking in the direction of the current. I continue to walk around the loop. I now encounter EMF2. As I walk across EMF2, I am walking across it in a direction that is opposite the direction of the EMF. So that means it comes in with a negative sign. So it would be minus EMF2. I'm walking all the way around this loop. I now encounter R2, okay? And I am walking across R2 in a direction that is counter the direction of the current. So it comes in with a positive I3 times R2. The sum of all of that, because I'm now back at point A, is equal to 0. Any questions about any of that? Now I'll do loop 2. I have to start somewhere. I'll start right here, lower left corner. I go walking around. I encounter EMF 1. I encounter it, and as I walk across it, I'm going in the direction of the EMF because I'm going from negative to positive. So this means I have a positive EMF 1. I now continue walking. I'm going across this branch now. You might say, but we just did that branch. Yeah, but that equation was an equation that was a relationship of all the changes as I go all the way around here. Now I'm doing it around here, and it contains different circuit elements, so it's independent information. It just happens to contribute to both. So I started here, positive EMF 1. Now I walk across R2. As I walk across it, I'm going in the direction of I3. So I have a potential drop. So it's minus I3 times R2. I continue walking. I now cross R3 here. I'm walking across R3 in the direction of I2, so it is a minus I2 times R3. I continue walking. I'm now walking across this EMF. I'm going against the EMF. Okay, so it comes in with a negative sign instead of a positive sign, so I'm negative E3. It's all equal to 0. And there you go. I have one equation, two equations, three equations. The problem asks you to find the currents. I can now solve for I1, I2, and I3 algebraically using those three equations. If solving n equations and n unknowns is something you're not comfortable with, please get comfortable with it this week. Three equations, three unknowns. This is, if I were to give you from grounds up and not set the problem up with a lot of things established for you to try to make it simpler, like I could, for example, give you this and ask you to find the independent equations as a way of asking you not to do all the algebra to solve for the currents, okay? Or I could set up and give you certain parts of it so that the solving for the currents is a lot easier in some ways. So I'm aware of what a pain it is to do the algebra. You're going to certainly want to go and do the algebra on some of your homework problems and workshop problems, partly so you respect how nice I'm being, and partly so you see how the whole process really works. But I have now three independent equations, which means I can solve them algebraically for three unknowns. In this particular problem, the way I set it up, these R's and E's I gave to you and what you don't have are the currents. If you solve these, and if at the start of solving this problem, you happen to have chosen I2 to be going in the wrong direction, and the correct direction for I3 and I1, when you solve for the actual numbers for those currents, you will get positive numbers for I1 and I3, meaning the direction you chose is correct. And you'll have a negative number for I2, meaning that it's actually going the opposite direction from the one you chose. Okay? Guts, you got to put down directions and get jumped into it. Conventions, as you note, it is, you got to keep all that straight. And consistency, you got to be really careful. Tell me it's not easy to screw up E1 minus I3, R2 minus R2, I2, R3. It is going to be really easy to screw up the twos and the threes there, right? And if you inadvertently put an I3, R2 here, you've just blown the whole problem. Okay, so you have to take your time, set them up carefully, and go through them. That said, it's just sort of algebra. If any of you are unfortunate enough to be taking electrical engineering, which my guess is that should be none of you or you wouldn't be in this class. If in a past life you did that, you may have discovered that the conventions are opposite. If the friend that you're using to explain everything to you about physics is some ECE engineering type down the hall, be aware that they may use conventions that are just opposite from the ones I just gave you, which is typically what we do in physics. Why we do that, I don't know. But just be aware of that. So, you know, just make sure that you're on the same page. It doesn't matter. I can flip all the signs and the conventions, and all the algebra works out just the same. Okay, so it's just a convention. But, just be aware of that. So, in the real world, the circuits are much more complicated than just this. And algebraically, it becomes impossible for a mere human to actually solve the problem. So, what you do is you pop all these values and everything into a big computer simulation program that basically plays this same game conceptually, stepping through lots of things and eventually gets an optimal solution to the circuit. So from a physicist's point of view, this is what's going on. From the reality, if you're going to go into computer circuit design or something, you know, fundamentally this is the physics, this is what's happening, but mathematically and in the real world can be a really thorny sort of problem, so it requires
simulating, nice computer simulating and things like that, which is what people who do ECE and stuff ought to be learning how to do in time. But the fundamentals are not so different from this. So with that, I will quit with this and wish you all a happy weekend.